Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Fair.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I am Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you so much, Audristons, because, folks, we got pulled off the switchboard here about 7 minutes before the show, and Audrey got us reconnected. What speed she can work at, and here we are live again to broadcast on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Welcome to the Blog Talk Radio Network and the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm your host, Keith Haley. Johnny Cash, I'm beginning to worry about him here after we talked about that news story several weeks ago where they've got that federal task force that thinks they're on to something about truckers across the United States maybe being involved in some of these serial killings. I think maybe there might not be much to that, but I haven't looked at the data. But Johnny, be careful who you ride with when you're thumbing out there. It's wonderful to hitchhike across the country. Most people can't even remember doing that. But be careful. You could be run into a serial killer. You truckers that are listening, the few that I know do, don't take offense at that. I'm really joking. Emily and Mike, thank you for being with us tonight. And ladies and gentlemen, tonight Emily is going to be featured a little. That's Emily Springfield. She's our news researcher, and she has a very special announcement, and I have one about her that we'll make tonight, and we'll get to that in just a few moments. Ladies and gentlemen, the purpose of our show is the same as it always is. We discuss news issues, events, and developments in the always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of the field of criminal justice. And certainly there's humor in the news today in the criminal justice field, as there is every day. We dedicate this show to these tireless police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals that protect us and serve us throughout the United States and indeed throughout the world. It's becoming more and more common, as I've mentioned before, for even local police and corrections officials to do some time overseas, where they're offering their services in exchange programs or a consultation capacity to help other nations improve their justice system. What we do is try to look inside the criminal justice field and take a close-up look at its professionals. Blog Talk Radio is a leading-edge technology, as everybody knows by now. Every week I look on there. There's someone else that's got a new show, the founder of C-SPAN. I think he has a show on there tonight. I don't think it's a one-time thing. Looks like that. Chris Simcox, the founder of the Minuteman, I announced, I think, last week or the week before. He now has a radio show on, and he's going to be running for the United States Senate against Senator McCain. And I've had the pleasure of interviewing, being with Chris Simcox a couple of times in Tombstone, Arizona, where he was the editor of the of the local newspaper. Well, what's possible, ladies and gentlemen, this fantastic network, is that any person, any interest group, can have their own show. They can broadcast live and streaming audio over the internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners, and it's absolutely free. And I don't know how many hours a week you can broadcast now, but there are people that have a show on every day that runs an hour. Some of them might take maybe even 2 hours. So, you know, do what you want. Get your own show. Many organizations are finding use for this. And I think someday I might even dedicate a show to sort of running through all the shows that sort of relate to crime and justice. That might be interesting because I think there's probably dozens, if not scores of them, or maybe more than that. Right now. So if you don't like what we do or what somebody else does on Blog Talk Radio Network, get your own show. You can do it at absolutely no cost, and you can sign up in less than probably three or four minutes. Tonight's going to be a special show. I love these old-time radio shows, and people probably who haven't listened to radio like that probably aren't that thrilled about them. But tonight we're going to listen to Candy Mattson, Girl Detective. That's how I have it billed, because that's how they sometimes refer to her. When you call the detective agency, you got Candy Mattson, and I wonder how many times they mistake her for the secretary when, in fact, she was the detective. Her show tonight is called The Movie Company, and it transpires this crime, this event, on Telegraph Hill in San Francisco. So I think you'll enjoy it very much. Tonight, you can call in if you wish during the news portion of the show. The call-in number is 347-996-5983. That's 347-996-5983. And we can hold about five calls at a time and talk to each other at the same time if we should ever have that happen. We haven't had it happen for a while since we had multiple authors on the show. But all shows can be played back almost immediately. You can download them. You can use them as you want. We know that some people use them in criminal justice and criminology classes across the United States. One more time, we break history tonight, and Audrey is a collector of blonde jokes. This is Audrey, are you ready tonight to break history? Yes. Audrey will be breaking history, and as soon as you hear this joke, you'll know. She's been collecting blonde jokes since she was a child. She has chests, trunks, rooms, computer disks full of these jokes. And tonight is a very special edition in the sense that we're going to have her do a joke that is, in fact, unique in our series of jokes since 2006. Audrey, are you set with this one? Go ahead and let's hear it.
Professor Haley, tonight's blonde joke has a bit of a twist to it, and I think you and the audience will like it. It is unique among blonde jokes. Here it is. A blonde walks into a bank in New York City and asks for the loan officer. She says she's going to Europe on business for 2 weeks and needs to borrow $5,000. The bank officer says the bank will need some kind of security for the loan, so the blonde hands over the keys to a new Rolls Royce. The car is parked on the street in front of the bank. She has the title, and everything checks out. The bank agrees to accept the car as collateral for the loan. The bank's president and its officers all enjoy a good laugh at the blonde for using a $250,000 Rolls as collateral against a $5,000 loan. An employee of the bank then proceeds to drive the Rolls into the bank's underground garage and parks it there. 2 weeks later, the blonde returns, repays the $5,000 and the interest, which comes to $15.41. The loan officer says, "Miss, we are very happy to have had your business, and this transaction has worked out very nicely, but we are a little puzzled. While you were away, we checked you out and found that you are a multimillionaire. What puzzles us is, why would you bother to borrow $5,000? The blonde replies, "We're out in New York City. Can I park my car for 2 weeks for only $15.41 and expect it to be there when I return?" Finally, a smart blonde.
Well, Well, thank you very much, Audrey. That is, in fact, the first smart blonde joke that we've done since the fall of 2006, and I wonder how many of those, many more of those you have in your collection. Thank you very much, Audrey. That was a fine joke. I'm going to use that one in a class somewhere. Well, ladies and gentlemen, on a much more serious note, as we approach the summertime, and you know, as the temperature goes up, crime goes up. Does that mean that hot temperatures cause crime? Not exactly. Things that vary in the same direction, one does not necessarily cause the other. But in the interest of doing something about the firearms problem in the United States, we're going to play the Ohio Coalition Against Firearms public service announcement, and we hope that this falls on the right ears. And I think it's directed toward, I know it is, toward the thugs and the gangbangers on the street with firearms, and it's a message that they should go turn in their firearms. Ohio Coalition, go ahead.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Ohio Coalition, it certainly is, and we thank you very much for that public service announcement. Now, a very special place in our show tonight. We want to announce something that Emily Springfield has done, and she is, in fact, our news researcher for the show and does an outstanding job. All these news stories that we pull up from, usually from the United States, but sometimes from all over the world, Emily is able to go through all that, find those stories, sort them out, and bring us the best ones for our show each evening. But Emily has done something else today. She is a part of a project, and here's what's happened. I have produced and published today my first audio book out of, a couple dozen books, counting new editions and things like that. And the book is published on archive.org, and it's an audio version of my book, The Three-Bowl Diet Book, which is a diet book for, criminal justice professionals and everybody else. And Ms. Emily Springfield read that book for us in the narration, and she did an outstanding job. And I know as this book gets some attention and they hear you, Emily, in the presentation of that book, that you're going to be asked to do this time and time again. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you went to archive.org and just typed in three-bowl diet in the search box, that's archive.org. I think Emily might say something about it. I'm going to ask her to speak here in just a moment. You will get that book. It runs about 59 minutes. And, again, Emily Springfield, our super researcher on the Blog Talk Radio Network, Jumbo Justice Radio Show, will be reading that book. Emily, comments?
I'm very proud to have been a part of the project that released the Three-Bowl Diet book to the world in audio form. Professor Haley, this was my first experience with the reading of an audio book for publication, and I want to thank him, sir, from the bottom of my heart for the opportunity. I hope all who have a chance to hear this book do indeed enjoy it, and that it works for them as they try to achieve the weight they desire. As you say, sir, it is simple and easy to lose weight if you follow the plan in the three-bowl diet. The listening audience can find the book for free at archive.org. Then type in the book title three-bowl diet in the search box blank and hit enter, and the book is yours to listen to.
Well, thank you very much, Emily. And again, your narration in that book is just outstanding. I could never do this. I don't know how you go word for word, paragraph after paragraph, page after page, and you don't even need any editing and never make a mistake. And again, the book runs about 1 hour on archive.org. It's a three-bowl diet if you're interested in it. And by the way, it is about dieting. There's also a digital copy of this book on Amazon's Kindle and a paper-bound version that sells on Amazon.com for you. Well, you can go see the price there. We don't usually try to hawk our wares on the show each time, but you don't have to now. You can go absolutely free to archive.org and get a copy of that, or listen to a copy of that book. Let's go ahead and look at some of our news stories tonight. There's certainly some interesting ones around in the world and things developing right now as we speak in the news, of course. But I thought this was sort of interesting. I've always admired some of Ted Nugent's writings for a number of reasons, but he has an interesting article he published on human events here on the 5th of May, and the article is entitled People or Sheeple. You probably know where Ted Nugent stands politically, at least in terms of the political spectrum, and some of his thoughts. I won't read you all of this, but because it's rather long, but he's talking about guns here in some way. He says, the cute chimp attacks the owner's best friend and eats her face and hands off. The primate's owner calls 911 and cries for help, that, as always, the help comes much too late. A 9-year-old girl takes a 160-pound bull mastiff for a walk and loses control. The giant dog clamps down on her head, and all people can do is scream and yell. Frightful. Another 9-year-old girl steps off the school bus in rural Michigan and is instantly attacked by a pack of feral dogs, all wearing collars. Again, all anybody can do is scream as the helpless girl's face and head is ripped to shreds. Ooh, terrible. I think I'll skip down in the list of some of these. A young athletic gal enters an apartment building in San Francisco after her daily jog and is met by a pair of snarling Doberman pincers that savagely attack and kill her. A Michigan farmer enters the breeding pen of his white-tailed deer and is gored and nearly killed by the dominant buck. A bobcat crashes through a window at a local tavern and begins chasing patrons. Get the idea? Stoned hippie spends years in the Alaskan wilderness, and in a drug-induced stupor, he pretends to befriend grizzly bears and give them names. He and his girlfriend are killed and eaten by his new friends. Nugent says, well, a family's picnicking in Northern California when a mountain lion stalks their picnic table and grabs the mother by the throat and drags her off into the forest. He says, final line in the article, I could go on, but I just thought I would mention that carrying a gun might be a good idea. Nah, some people are sheeple. All right, that's a good one. This is kind of interesting. I don't know if you ever had the chance to listen to Michael Savage. I don't listen to him every night of the week, but he's on every night of the week. He's the third most listened to talk show commentator in the United States. I believe probably Rush Limbaugh was first, and Sean Hannity might be second. I'm not sure who is exactly second, maybe Glenn Beck, but I think Sean Hannity. And Michael Savage has had 5 New York Times bestsellers, and he's written over 20 books. And he has now been banned from travel to England by the Home Secretary. The government there says that because of the way he speaks on his radio show, now, I want to be clear about this. He says, we're more likely than not to ban someone for what they think. The list of people banned over the last 6 months, a former member of the Ku Klux Klan, a neo-Nazi, a Hamas MP, a Baptist minister, and his daughter are barred for homophobia and a Jewish extremist. And they're banning Savage because of his views on Islam, rape, and autism have stirred controversy. And he's not allowed to go into the nation. I've listened to him enough to know that although he sometimes gets cranky and sometimes rude to some of his callers, mainly based on their illogical and immature thinking, I have never heard him ever make a racist statement, in fact, and I've never heard him ever advocate violence. But he's suing, by the way. He's already talked to attorneys in Britain, and they think he has a very good case. I think some of these other cases where he's been sued, he's actually won. But that's an interesting step for out of the clear blue sky of all the people that could be banned from traveling to England. He made a joke out of it his first, doggone it. He was getting ready to go on the plane, but he's not going to do that anymore. But kind of interesting, how world could that happen to a talk show host who is the third most listened to in the United States. And he's the most popular radio show in San Francisco, by the way, which politically are the median political score there would be somewhat to the left of Michael Savage. But kind of an interesting thing that this could happen, and it would be I'll be curious to find out how his court suit turns out in England. Here's one about this. Remember the teen that actually went to work with the Chicago Police Department for a number of shifts. He was 15 years old, and he went to work in a police uniform, and it took him a few shifts to find out that he was a 15-year-old guy and didn't belong there. Somebody finally asked him about it. Guess what he's done now? A 15-year-old accused of impersonating a Chicago police officer. He's now charged with stealing a Lexus during a test drive at a car lot, a juvenile prosecutor said. The boy, dressed in a suit and tie, allegedly stole the used Lexus Friday by pretending he was in the market to buy a car, said Roderick Drew, a police spokesman. In January, when he was 14, the same teen allegedly, well, he's 14, impersonated a Chicago police officer and was so convincing he was allowed to drive the squad car, says the Chicago Tribune. Because he's a juvenile, he's still not been named. The teen, by the way, did not have a driver's license, allegedly took the Lexus after the dealer stepped away for a moment and then drove it for 3 hours before being chased by the police and crashing into a light pole, the Tribune reports. There's another story one of my friends in Dallas called me about. I don't have the details yet, but I'll comment on that, I think, next week. They had an impersonator down there, too, that also worked with the Arlington Police Department. I think this guy said he was with Homeland Security and some other things, and he got away with it. But just absolutely amazing that you would think that that could go on. You folks remember the woman, Lori Drew? She was from Missouri, and she was involved in a MySpace hoax where a 13-year-old neighbor girl committed suicide. Well, she's been placed on probation for 1 year and fined $5,000 for her misdemeanor convictions, according to probation officials. This recommendation was included in court documents by Ms. Drew's lawyer. She could have faced up to 3 years in prison and a $300,000 fine on 3 counts. Well, what did she do? Ms. Drew violated MySpace service rules by helping create a fictitious teenage boy on the social networking site and sending flirtatious messages from him to Megan Meyer, a neighbor in suburban St. Louis. The fake boy then sent Megan a message saying the world would be better off without her. Guess what? Megan hanged herself a short time later. This trial was held in Los Angeles because the servers of the social networking site are actually in that area. But isn't that incredible that, I don't know, you know, there's no two people in the world that would agree on any sentence. But that certainly sounds like an odd one, doesn't it? I mean, she gets involved in this type of hoax and creates this fictitious character that actually causes of a young woman to commit suicide. Terrible. I don't know about these social networking sites for people of any age, to be honest about it. One of these days I'm going to get up and explore some of those things, but I don't participate in that myself. I just heard too many bad stories from young people and adults that have been slammed and smeared because of things that they put on that particular site. And another state failed to repeal the death penalty. Right now, under tough budget constraints in many states, one of the things they're thinking about doing is at least states that sometimes execute people, they're thinking about not having the death penalty anymore. And each time that there's an execution, we say in our textbook, Introduction to Criminal Justice, it costs anywhere from $2 to $3 million to carry out an execution. Of course, that's not the execution itself. It's all of the appeals that take place over a period of 8, 9, 10, sometimes as many as 20 years. But the Colorado House voted in support of the repeal by a single vote majority last month. And here the state Senate, after 2 hours of a sometimes anguished and angry debate, they said, they left the bill in limbo and supporters scrambling to find votes at the end of the session, which looms this week. So it doesn't look like Colorado is going to be able to get rid of the death penalty either. A couple other stories here I'd like to comment on before we get to our show tonight. This is one that the Supreme Court on Monday rejected a favorite tool of prosecutors in immigration cases. Probably heard about this one. Ruling unanimously that a federal identity theft law may not be used against many illegal workers who use false Social Security numbers to get their jobs. The question in this case was whether workers who use fake ID numbers to commit some other crimes must know they belong to a real person in order to be subject to a 2-year sentence extension for aggravated identity theft. So what happens is the federal agents threaten, tell them, look, we're going to charge you with this 2-year extension because you use somebody else's, you use a real Social Security number, for example. Well, the Supreme Court, the answer to the Supreme Court said that you can't do that anymore. Prosecutors use the threat of that punishment to persuade illegal workers to plead guilty to lesser charges of document fraud. The court ruling preserves the basic ideals of fairness for some of our society's most vulnerable workers. Well, it's a question whether our society, if they're not here legally, but that's what they said. And it turns out that a number belongs to a real person. 2 years will be added to the sentence, but if the defendant is lucky, and the number does not belong to another person, the statute is not violated. So to make this fair, they're going to drop the whole idea of being able to be charged with that. Now, I think some of these people know that they're buying a real Social Security number. They certainly know that there's the possibility that the number would be real. But such is the kind of story in our battle against illegal immigration. Can we call it a battle? I don't know. I don't think I talked about, well, last week was an encore presentation, so we didn't talk about this, but this was good. This was Chief Justice Roberts' comments Wednesday in announcing one of the term's less momentous Supreme Court decisions, and this is the case of the bumbling bank robber. The bank robber for Christopher Dean, he was wearing a mask and waving a gun when he entered a branch of the AmSouth Bank in Rome, Georgia, in the year 2004, saying the usual thing. Everyone, as instructed, got down. He walked behind the teller counter, grabbed the cash with his left hand, and holding the gun with his right hand. The gun accidentally went off, bang, hurting no one. Mr. Dean cursed, and then he fled the bank with $3,642. He was convicted and sentenced to 18 years in prison, which included a mandatory additional 10-year sentence under federal law for committing a crime in which a firearm is discharged, not carried, but discharged. Chief Justice Roberts said accidents happen in the 7-2 majority case. Sometimes that happens in individuals committing crimes of loaded guns. So he's saying tough luck in this case. He sees a duck fly by the window and he's a hunter, Justice Breyer said, referring perhaps to one of Justice Scalia's comments. And Scalia said, the sentence law does require that the discharge be during and in relation to the crime. And the argument last month asked Mr. Dean's lawyer for an example of a gun discharge during a bank robbery that would not qualify. So the best thing you can do is be very careful with your firearm if you're a bank robber. And they're not actually up right now in these hard times, I don't think. I heard a comment on that about Northwest Ohio. But anyway, be careful if you're a robber. That gun goes off, you're going to get charged extra. I have another story here I'm going to hold for another week, and it's an interesting one about the counterterrorism squad at the Los Angeles, California Police Department, and it has some incredible implications to something here that the LA police are doing. But ladies and gentlemen, what we're going to do now, we're going to take a look at Candy Matson, and she is a woman private detective, and she's operating in a very important case tonight, interesting case tonight, called The Movie Company, and I think you'll enjoy this show. She's quite a character, great voice, and a great casting for this particular part. So next week, by the way, we're going to be dealing with the 2008 annual report on Ohio's concealed handgun law. That report's out. It's about 34 pages. I'm going to digest a lot of it for you and maybe have one or two people comment on particular aspects of the report. So enjoy the rest of the show, and here's Candy Matson starring in The Movie Company.
Hello, Yukon 28209. Yes, this is Candy Matson. Thank you.
that baby on the tree.
Fix those dolly tracks.
And look out for that cable, it's hot.
Mallard, what in the name of the San Francisco Police Department are you doing up here on Telegraph Hill?
Working, Candy, in the name of the San Francisco Police Department.
Here? With these people who are making the movie?
Yeah. How about that? Me, a lieutenant in homicide, and I'm assigned to riding herd on these Hollywood characters.
Oh, it's better than murder.
I'll take murder any day. What are you doing around here?
I did some shopping at Speedy's this morning, and while I was pinching the avocados, they told me that there was a Hollywood gang over by Coit Tower shooting some scenes for a movie with a San Francisco background.
They might just as well have stayed in the studio and brought their own lawns, prop trees, fake bushes, the works. If it ever snowed up here on Telegraph Hill, they'd have brought some of that along, too.
You've never worked in Hollywood, Mallard. Only God can make a tree, but Hollywood presumes to improve on them. What are they doing now?
Just getting ready to shoot a scene, I think.
Oh.
They've been rehearsing it all morning.
What's it all about, you know?
As far as I can figure, it's a story about San Francisco right after the gold rush. Look at all the costumes.
Very authentic. Looks like they'd been shipped around the horn. By the way, Mallard, do you know who's in the picture?
Some lush tomato named Cherry Dana and the Colorado boy, Buff Arnold.
Arnold? Did you say Buff Arnold?
That's right. What?
Oh, forgive me, Mallard, dear. I knew Buff Arnold when he didn't have a place to house in. He professed to carry a very warm torch for me.
Uh-huh. So that's why you so casually dropped by.
Oh.
An old flame, huh?
Don't be ridiculous. I didn't even know the guy was here, let alone stealing pictures.
Hey, likely story.
All right, quiet, please. Let's have quiet.
Quiet. This is a take.
All set, Mr. Dix. We're ready.
Good. Okay, Cherry, we'll roll this one. Take a chance on it. Just remember to keep up against those trees. We don't want any shots of those modern buildings below the hill.
I'll remember it.
Where is my old pal, Buff Arnold, Mallard, dear?
By me. Judging by what's been going on, he's not in this particular scene. Mm-hmm.
All right, stand by. Roll him.
Scene 47, take 10.
Wait a minute, wait a minute. Cut, cut. Oh, where's that coming from?
Out on the bay, Mr. Dick.
A fine thing, a present-day steamer whistle in an 1850 picture. Hold it. Ames.
Yes?
Let me know when the fool ship is tied up. We won't shoot the scene until it's docked.
Yes, sir.
Oh, darn it, I was hoping I'd see some action.
Well, I'll give you some action. Come on, walk around with me, Candy. I'll show you all the sights.
Sights like what, for instance, Mallard?
Oh, all the lights they brought up here. I must have 1,000 of them.
Undoubtedly to wash out the wrinkles on the leading lady's face.
And talk about props. It must have taken a whole freight train to get them up here.
Oh, I had to have them.
For instance, look, right up there.
Hmm? Where, Mallard?
Up there, above. In that tree, hanging by their necks.
Oh, Mallard.
Don't jump like that, Cupcake. Oh. They're only dummies hanging from those ropes.
Three of them. They look so realistic.
I must admit, they really do. I understand they use them in a scene where they recreate a lynching in Portsmouth Square.
Recreate, did you say?
Yeah.
Maybe you're right. Take another look, honey bun. A good look at the one in the middle.
What are you trying to... Fry me for lard. That one in the middle is no dummy.
You're no dummy either, boy of mine. How many times have you looked up there?
Just a couple of times, but the last time I looked, the one in the middle wasn't an ex-human being.
With that, I toss the whole thing in your lap, Mallard. I promote you back to homicide.
Oh, why didn't these characters stay in Hollywood?
It's a shame, isn't it? Cluttering up our lovely Telegraph Hill trees with gently swaying corpses. Come on, Mallard. Let's give the director a slight touch of apoplexy.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Funny how sometimes when you're lazy and want to do nothing except live the good, pure life, trouble comes up and belts you over the head with a vengeance. Well, that's the way it happened to me. I'd just finished a deal. It took me 3 weeks to crack. I made some good money out of it, banked it, and sat back to relax. But when I heard about the movie company on location on the other side of the hill, my curiosity got the better of me. As of that moment, my contemplated relaxation was at an end. Period. Paragraph. I literally walked right into trouble because there was Mallard and there was this grim-looking body swinging from the branch of a tree. We contacted the director and he had the body cut down.
Okay, Mr. Dix, take a good look at him. You recognize the gent?
I recognize him, yes, but I don't know him. He was one of the extras we used at a scene yesterday.
Did he come up from Hollywood with you?
I'm pretty sure he didn't. I think he was hired here locally. Wait a minute. Who's this young lady? I don't want any outsiders in on this.
Don't fret your little head, Mr. Dick. Aside from being a material witness, she's a well-known private investigator.
Ah, excuse me. I didn't know.
That's all right. No need to apologize. Some of my best friends are movie directors.
Who would keep the roster on your personnel?
My assistant, Bill Ames.
Is he around?
Well, I'm right here, Lieutenant.
Oh, good. Can you give us any dope on this fellow?
Oh, golly, I'm afraid not. I've seen him, but I wouldn't know his name from Adam.
How about the payroll? When do you pay off the extras?
Ah, that's a thought.
We pay off at 5 o'clock tonight.
Why don't we come back then, Mellard? We can check off the names against the pay vouchers. There's one thing extras like to do, and that's get paid. The name that doesn't show up is our friend the corpse.
Okay, we'll let it go like that. What do you pay off?
Room 873, Montfair Hotel.
Make sure everybody's there, unless they want a little trouble thrown at them. I'm sorry, Mr. Dick. You can go on with your shooting now.
No more today. It's too unnerving. Ames, knock it off. Call will be for 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, sharp.
Right, Chief.
Break it up, everybody. 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, in costume. And that means 8 o'clock, understand?
You mind waiting here for a moment, Candy? I want to put in a call to the coroner's office for a wagon.
Sure, that's all right. Go ahead.
Good. It'll only be a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Dick, pardon me.
Yes?
Can you tell me where Buff Arnold is staying?
What do you want with Buff Arnold, young lady?
I used to know him when he was playing bit parts in Hollywood.
Oh. Did you work in Hollywood?
I did a little time down there, sitting around in agents' offices.
You know, you're a sharp little cookie. Say, all of a sudden I've got an idea.
I'll bet.
No. On the level, believe me. I have a small part coming up that'll fit you to a tee. Good-looking gal, wise, supposed to work in her father's store selling supplies to the miners. Can you act at all?
I used to shoot a fairly sharp mix of dialogue.
Do you live close by?
Right over there, one block. Penthouse on the top.
All the better. As soon as your policeman friend removes the deceased there, why don't we go over to your place and look at the script?
You know something? I've got an idea. That's the idea you had the idea about. Okay, I'll look at the script. But for your information, Mr. Dick, I'm interested only in playing a part in your picture. Mallard came back, and I told him what had developed with Dick. He shot me a look that had more question marks in it than a government income tax form. I assured him I could handle the situation, and he left with the body, still clad in its 49er prospector's outfit. Dick issued some final orders, took me by the arm, and we strolled over to my place.
Charming, but positively charming.
Thank you.
What a gorgeous view. How long have you lived here, Miss... Now, isn't that silly? I don't even know your name.
Matson. Candy Matson.
Candy Matson. Never have I heard a name match a personality so completely. I'm Reginald Dix. Just call me Reg.
As you say, Reg. Would you like a drink?
Oh, splendid. Soda highball?
I think I can scrape one together.
This is absolutely enchanting. I'm going to ask to make all my pictures in San Francisco from now on.
I don't think you'd go wrong. Of course, it'd be a little rough if you were making a picture with an Indian background and needed shots of the Taj Mahal and the Himalayas.
Oh, simple. I'd change it to the Ferry Building in Twin Peaks.
Very good. Here you are, Reg.
Thank you. I can use this after that messy discovery up there on that tree. Well, here's the crime.
That's a charming toast. Now then, about this part you were speaking of, I don't even belong to the Screen Actors Guild anymore.
Oh, a mere detail. I'll call the studio tonight and have them arrange your membership.
As simple as that. You know, I think if some of your bright boys got together, you could win the war in Korea without half trying.
Oh, let's not be snide, my dear.
Oh, excuse me a moment. Someone at the door.
Certainly. Whoever it is, though, send them away.
Yes. Hi. Hi. But now that we've established our highs, is there something I can do for you?
I'm Terry Dana. Is Mr. Dix here?
Oh, why, yes. Would you wait here, please?
I will not wait here. I want in.
Now, just a minute.
There you are, Ed. You have a short memory, haven't you?
Terry, what are you doing here? I'm having a conference.
So I see.
I hate to mention it, but this happens to be a private home, Miss Dana. I'll have to ask you to leave.
Don't be boring. You lured my director up here, and I'm going to see that some little local wench doesn't put the squeeze play on him.
Why, you pampered brat, get out of here right now, or I'll show you how a local wench can back up words with action.
Oh, now, hold on here, both of you. Cherry, I resent this intrusion just as much as Miss Matson does, I'm sure.
I'll bet. What about me? You said you were going to drive me back to the hotel.
Very well, it slipped my mind. I'm sorry, Candy. I dislike scenes of this sort. We'll discuss our business later.
Good. I find now that I'm extremely interested. Good afternoon, Miss Dana. I'll see you later. I was so mad I was boiling. If I'd been a thermometer, quicksilver would have been streaming out of my ears. I did the most natural thing, took a shower, and little by little I simmered down. Actors and actresses are like anybody else. Most of them are darn nice people just trying to make a living. But one ham, like Cherry Dana, can ruin the picture. Just as I was getting dressed, the ferry building siren blew its top, indicating 4:30. I had to step on it if I was going to be at the Montclair at 5 in time for the payroll sequence with the extras. So I stepped on it and found myself in a minor mob scene outside room 873 at the Montclair Hotel. Mallard spotted me, grabbed me by the arm, and took me inside the room.
I really didn't expect to see you, Candy.
Why not?
I thought perhaps you were discussing contract terms with Dex by now. Big Hollywood star and all that.
Oh, Mallard, cut it out.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. As I call out your names, step up fast and sign the voucher. Anderson, Robert. Apperson, Lou.
Yep.
Bennett, Bert. Beverly.
I studied the faces as they stepped by the cashier's table set up in the room. They were all tight. Anyone could have been a villain, a dance hall girl, a hero, and as they were just plain extra. The roll call droned on in the background. The whole thing took about 10 minutes. And suddenly, we were alone. Ames, the assistant director, the girl who had done the actual paying, Mallard, and myself.
Well, that's it.
Who's missing, Ames?
You're in for a bit of a shock.
How do you mean?
Nobody's missing. Everybody listed on our payroll, checked in, and was paid off.
What?
That's right.
Did you recognize every person who had been paid off?
I'm pretty sure I did.
Well, this is a fine kettle of nothing. We have an extra who's working in the picture, and yet he isn't. So he ends up hanging by his neck from a tree on Telegraph Hill. Who was the Joker?
The Joker, the one you can play wild. Are you sure they're all paid?
Well, positive. Double-check with their guild cards and signatures.
Well, isn't this cute?
Oh, excuse me, please. Hello? Yes, this is Ames. Oh, yes, Cherry.
What? He's what?
Great Scott.
What's the matter, Ames? What is it? You're white as a sheet.
Dix. He's just been found shot to death in his room.
From San Francisco, the National Broadcasting Company is presenting Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Reginald Dix, well-known Hollywood director, shot dead in his hotel room. We were looking for developments. We got them, but not the kind we expected. Mallard led the way up to the suite that Dix had been occupying on the top floor. There was a mob around the door, and my boy Mallard soon dispersed them and instituted some semblance of order. Dix was sprawled out on the balcony overlooking the bay, and an ever-widening pool of blood showed that he'd been hit in the chest. Cherry Dana was facing the room, smoking a cigarette. Ames stood in the middle with his jaw flapping. And who should be in the room, too, but my old pal from my days in Hollywood, Buff Arnold.
Candy Matson. What a place for a reunion.
Yes, isn't it? How are you, Buff?
Ill. Terribly ill. If I have to step into the other room, I hope you'll understand. Reg was a great friend of mine.
Sure, let's go in the bedroom. You look sort of green. Besides, I have a few questions I'd like to ask you, Buff.
It's a deal. Anything to get out of here, let's go.
Wait a minute, Candy. Who is this guy?
Buff Arnold, Mallard, the fellow I was speaking about.
Where were you going?
In there. He doesn't feel too good. The closest he's ever been to blood is a bottle of ketchup in color.
Okay. Don't let him out of your sight. I have a flock of questions and need a flock of answers.
As you say, Mallard.
And don't get carried away yourself.
This the bedroom?
Yeah.
Buff, you seem to be doing all right.
A lot different than when I knew you in Hollywood, Candy.
You look swell, Buff. Too darn swell.
What do you mean?
You bring back too many memories.
You look mighty good yourself, Candy. You're no longer a plump little kid just out of high school. You're downright pretty, gal.
In the good old days, I'd have jumped through hoops to hear you say that.
Got any hoops handy? I'll say it again.
No soap.
Maybe we could revive some of those memories, Candy.
Not a chance, Buff Boy. Things have changed. Hollywood and everyone in it, including you, were a part of a dim, sad past. And instead of just plain Buff, that's a rebuff.
Very cute. I haven't heard the gag call since yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, did you hear about the body that was found on Telegraph Hill this morning?
I sure did. Now, poor Reg. I told him this picture had a jinx on it before we left the studio. Little things that happened right from the start.
Like what?
Well, in the first place, I wasn't even supposed to be in the picture. They're going to give it to some new kid as a build-up. A week before the first day of shooting, he up and disappeared. He hasn't been heard from since. When they shoved me into the breach. Then the assistant director tripped and fell off a catwalk, broke both legs. He had to be replaced.
Anything else, Buff?
Yeah. About that time, Cherry Dana whipped herself into a batch of temperament and walked off the lot. Held up production a week. Then the luggage for San Francisco was rerouted somewhere else. Never has caught up with us. Now the body this morning and fixed just now.
Certainly sounds like a jinx. By the way, how do you and the great Cherry get along, Buff?
Fine. I try not to see her except on the set. Come here, Candy. Let me hold you in my arms once. Just once. I want the feel of someone who is truly genuine.
You're still just a little boy, aren't you, Buff?
Okay, Arnold, I'd like to, Well, pardon me. I hate to break this up, but I want to talk to you, Mr. Arnold.
That was a fine time Mallard picked to walk in. And then I got to thinking, maybe it was a fine time. He was due to have a little fire set under him. As I walked out into the other room, the boys in blue had arrived, and they were swarming all over the place. Amos was no longer present, neither was Cherry Dana. I wasn't going to give Mallard the satisfaction of an explanation, so I eased out the door and went down to the lobby. I asked where Ames was staying and went back up to his room, 672. A knock on the door produced results.
Just a moment.
Oh, Miss Matson. Something you wanted?
Yes, may I come in?
Why, yes. I was just lying down. This thing about Reg has knocked me for a complete loop.
It seems to be quite a shock to everybody. You've been with Reginald Dix for a long time, haven't you?
Well, off and on, yes. A good number of years.
How about La Dana?
Cherry? Well, I've known her extremely well, even before she became a top-flight star.
Can you give me any idea who might have had it in for Dix? If you can, you better still. The truth will come out sooner or later, Ames. It always does in things of this sort.
I've only one little thing I can tell. I've already told it to your lieutenant friend.
Oh? And what's that?
As I got back from Telegraph Hill, I dropped by Reg's suite. Wanted to talk about tomorrow's shooting. As I drew near his door, I heard loud arguing.
Arguing? Who were the opponents?
Reg and Cherry Dana.
Mm-hmm. And what were they arguing about, Ames?
You.
So that's it. Tell me, is Cherry the kind of woman who would turn killer on an impulse?
It's hard to say. She has a terrible temper.
Mm-hmm. Is Buff Arnold fit into the picture in any way?
I don't know. He's a sly one, that Arnold. He plays his cards in strictly a commercial manner. He may fit into the picture. He and Reg were never too friendly.
Oh, thanks, Amy. I'll leave now, and you'd better lock your door. The way things are going, you might wake up to find yourself dead. I went up to Cherry Dana's suite, but I drew a blank there, no answer. So I went back to the scene of the murder, Dix's rooms on the top floor. Mallard was just leaving. He shot me a look that would have knocked out a North Korean tank at 1,000 yards and started to brush on by me, but I would have none of it. Now, just a moment, Boy Blue. Come on back to that over 21 level. Just because Buff had his arms around me is no sign we were playing a scene from Romeo and Juliet.
I don't think I've seen that close a grip even in professional wrestling.
Oh, cut it out. What'd you turn up in there? Anything at all?
No, not a thing. Can't even find the murder weapon.
Got any ideas?
Lots of them. We've already taken Miss Dana into custody.
Well, I had a hunch it was leading in that direction.
Incidentally, did you ever hear of a Christopher Seema? He's been a bookie around town here for several years.
Christopher Zima? No, can't say I have. Why?
He was the boy who was hanging from the tree. According to our files, he dabbled in everything from gambling to blackmail.
Zima. Zima, that name rings bells somehow, Millie.
One other thing. This isn't personal, you understand.
Yeah.
But stay away from Buff Arnold. We've got our eye on him, too.
Little things were suddenly clicking way back in my mind, awfully vague, but the old processes from years before were coming to life ever so slowly. Mallard had work to do, plenty of it, down at the Hall of Justice, work in which I was included out. I went outside on California Street, watched him get into a squad car with two of his men, and I waved him a goodbye. That was when I had another idea. Fix this suite. Cops were through with it. The body'd been removed. But I had a hunch that was the key to the situation. Knowing the manager of the Montfair, it was no trouble at all to get a key to Reggie's suite, and that's where I headed, up to the top floor. I let myself into the darkened room, closed the door behind me. With the lights of the city way below seeping through the balcony window, I found a place in back of the settee and sat down to wait and think. The balcony window being open, the roar of the city traffic underneath came gently through and hooked my thinking. That's when it hit me. Zima. Several years before I had served my term in Hollywood, there was an actress named Vivian Zima. The same face as that of Cherry Dana. Now the clouds were beginning to lift, and at the same time, the door opened in the suite and the silhouetted figure of a man entered the room. Okay, Buff. Relax.
What?
Candy. Come on over here by the settee. Hurry. I'm expecting company.
What are you doing here, Candy?
You've got the wrong page of the script. That's my line. What are you doing here, Buff?
Honestly, you've got to believe me. I left my lighter here this afternoon. I was afraid the police would find it. Naturally, I can't afford any bad publicity. It would ruin my career.
I believe you, Buff. You always were fond of that career, weren't you? Don't answer this. Keep quiet.
What's up?
A guy named Zima, if I'm right. This is Reginald Dixon and Michael. Wait a minute. I can hear someone coming along the hall. The door slowly opened and closed. Dim light in the hall showed the form of another man. Then the dark figure moved slowly but surely across the room. Stopped for a second or two, as though listening for something. Then moved again to the balcony, out onto the balcony, and whoever it was grabbed the ledge above, hoisted his feet up onto the iron grillwork, and hung over the city. That's when I acted. Okay, Ames, stay right where you are, in that position.
What? You think I'm a fool? Candy's not on that ledge. He's ducked around the outside on that ledge.
He's a fool. Quick, Buff. Go down the hall and get out of the fire escape. Cut him off.
Okay. What are you going to do?
Go out on that ledge after him. You better come back, Ames. You're cut off at both ends.
Oh, no, I'm not. Not with this gun I've got.
That's the same gun you killed Dix with, isn't it? Very clever hiding it up on this ledge out here. No wonder Mallard and his boys didn't find it. Look out there on the city, Ames. One misstep and you go off into space. Think it over. You better come back.
Not on your life.
I'm coming after you.
I'm down the other end, Candy.
Good. Now we've got him.
Yes. Yes, you have. Obviously, this is the end. Perhaps you don't know what it is to love. Perhaps you don't know what it is to be scorned. I do. Painfully so. This is the end. But I'm not going to go alone. You're going with me, Miss Matson, like this.
No! No, the recoil, it'll knock you right out of the net. Oh!
So it was just a matter of jealousy. Is that right, Candy?
That's right, Mallard. The same thing you developed when you walked in on Buff Arnold and me.
Okay, okay, so I was burned up. Tell me more.
It was the name Zima that did it, Mallard. Do you know what that is?
All right, I'll play quizzes with you. What's the name Zima?
Zima is Ames, spelled backwards.
Oh.
You see, that was Ames' real name. At one time, he had married Cherry Dana under the name of Zima. When she began to be big in pictures, she divorced him, but he carried the eternal torch.
Silly, she wasn't worth it.
Of course not. because she collected men. Reginald Dix, not because she loved him, but because she was fading in pictures and because Dix was the only one who could keep her in front of the public.
Logical. But what about the SEMA hung up in the tree on Telegraph Hill?
Uh-huh. There we have the plot. The SEMA up in the tree was Ames's brother, a ne'er-do-well. The night that Ames arrived in town here, he looked up his brother, got a bit tight, and told him what he'd done. Caused the original leading man to disappear, shoved the original assistant director off a platform, breaking his legs. In general, did everything he could to sabotage the picture. Then he pulled the strings to get himself named as assistant director so he could be near Cherry.
Love and jealousy.
Mallard, I'll get to that in time. Cherry had vaguely promised that she'd remarry Ames. When he saw his own brother was going to blackmail him, he went crazy. That's when he strung him up with the dummies in the trees. From there, it was just a step to knock off Reginald Dix and have a clear track for himself.
Well, I'll go back to what I said to begin with. Why did these characters from Hollywood have to come up here to San Francisco and louse up our scenery, as well as our police department?
Oh, to heck with your police department. That's the last time I'm going to climb around a ledge hundreds of feet in the air.
Not so strange. Buff Arnold was out on that ledge, too, wasn't he?
Oh, Mallard, sometimes you make me... That reminds me. I have a date tomorrow night.
Sure. With Buff Arnold.
No, no. That's tomorrow morning. I'm driving him down to the railroad station. Date for tomorrow night? With you, Mallard, dear. We're going to see a Roy Acuff movie.
Oh, Candy. Roy Acuff. Monarch of all the cowboys.
Yeah, monarch of all the cowboys. I'll see him with you. Oh. And if that isn't love, I don't know what is.
Listen again next week at this same time. For excitement and adventure, just dial...
Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Heard tonight for Hal Burdick as Reginald Dix, John Grover as Ames, the assistant director, Mary Milford as Cherry Dana, Kurt Martell as Buff Arnold, and included in the cast was Ken Langley. Henry Left plays the part of Lieutenant Ray Mallard. The program stars Natalie Masters as Candy and is written and directed by Monty Masters. Sound effects are created by Bill Brownell, and Eloise Rowan is heard at the organ. The characters in tonight's play were entirely fictitious. Any resemblance to actual people is purely coincidental. Tonight's
any resemblance would be coincidental. The Candy Matson shows are very interesting. If you care to listen to some more of them, you can find them in the audio or the old-time radio section of archive.org. I think these shows were not absent of some sexism here and there, that's for sure. But Candy was able to handle all of it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, look at the billing for next week's show. It's going to be about Ohio's concealed handgun law and the 2008 report on issuance numbers, suspensions, revocation of licenses, etc. I think you'll find that interesting. So we will be meeting again, and we'll ask Beryl in one more time to sign us off tonight.
We'll meet again. Don't know when, but I know we'll meet again. Some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We'll meet again. Don't know when. But I know we'll meet again some sunny day.